Welcome to the Yoga Hour, offering insights and practices for spiritually conscious living in today's world. Here is your host, Dr. Laurel Trujillo.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, where we talk about yoga in all its depth and breadth as a path to spiritually conscious, fulfilled living in today's world. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, host and producer of the show. Today, we'll be discussing how we can use Ayurveda's ancient principles to recognize and correct imbalances in women's bodies. I am joined today by Kate O'Donnell. Kate is the author of 4 books about Ayurveda, published in 7 languages. She's also an international presenter, certified Ayurveda practitioner, and teacher. She's the founder of the Ayurvedic Living Institute, an online community space for self-transformation. Kate's newest book, which we will be discussing today, is Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health, which will be published next week on April 23rd, 2024. Her website is healwithkate.org. You can also follow her on social media at Instagram at kateodonnell.ayurveda, on Facebook at Ayurvedic Living Institute. Welcome to the Yoga Hour, Kate O'Donnell. I'm really delighted you could join me today on the show.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Before we begin our dialogue about Ayurveda and women's health, let's begin with a moment of contemplation. So let's take this moment, this yoga moment, as an opportunity to let go of anything that happened earlier today, any concern about what might happen later, and just be right here, right now. Let's begin by paying attention to our body, just feeling our body in space. Whatever we're doing, just noticing. Noticing particularly any surfaces that are supporting our weight, whether we're sitting, driving, maybe we're walking, just feeling the parts of our weight that are supported. And then turn the attention to the breath. Just notice the next breath. Notice the inhale and the exhale. Notice on the next inhale, the coolness of the air in the nostrils. On the exhale, feel how that air is now warmer, having passed through the body. Just continuing to focus on the breath on each inhale and each exhale, here is something to contemplate. A quote from Yogacharya O'Brien from her book, Living for the Sake of the Soul. Every cell of our body is vibrant with divine power and wisdom. Learn to listen to its music. Attend to its prompts toward right action. Though the body continually sends out signals and clues for self-care and balanced living, too often we ignore these signals. We neglect to eat when we are hungry or sleep when we are tired. Learning to discern and heed the simple promptings of body wisdom is profoundly more important than accumulating information about healthy living. Study the book of your daily life, the signals of the body, the nudges of your conscience. Witness the way your heart opens into the beauty of the day, given enough space. Witness the way your heart opens into the beauty of the day, given enough space. Om. Once again, Kate O'Donnell, welcome back to the Yoga Hour.
Good to be
here.
I'm
really delighted about your new book. I'm delighted to have you back as a guest today to talk about how to promote optimal health and wellness for women through Ayurveda. I should point out, although we'll be focusing on today on women's health, most of the principles that we'll be discussing today about the elements, the doshas, and the importance of balance are really applicable to everyone. And I'm sure everyone has women in their lives that might benefit from listening to this podcast. As I mentioned, your new book, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health, is going to be out next week, and I found it such a thoughtful, comprehensive, and beautiful book. It really takes the reader through all the seasons and cycles of the female body. As I mentioned, you have three other books that you've written about Ayurveda, and I should point out your prior books are some of my favorite sources of information about Ayurveda due to their clarity and their accessibility. I wanted to ask about the new book. What led you to write this book at this time?
We definitely didn't have this book yet. You know, the information that we have about Ayurveda, a lot of it is drawn from the classical texts. So there's kind of, you know, a stack of books that have been codified, you know, started out as word of mouth thousands of years ago. And then it's sort of in medieval times, we started to see these texts be codified. And then today, you know, we have Ayurveda cookbooks and Ayurveda lifestyle books and all sorts of things. But I didn't feel that we had the book that discusses how Ayurveda principles apply to women's health, things like our hormonal balance, our hormonal cycles, the activities of birthing and gestation, postpartum, menstruation. You know, there are specific things that a woman's body does on a regular basis, as well as throughout the course of the life. And I just felt that, I love that quote you just read, Laurel, about, you know, how information about healthy living can be much less effective than paying attention to the body. And I really feel that Ayurveda gives us a language and a sort of template in which to pay attention to the body and get a lot of really good information. So I wanted to put the language together in such a way that women had an empowered experiential view of the body and its functions, its physiologies throughout all the stages of life, you know, which it's very unique. We go from sort of menarch through menstrual years, menopause, and also aging, right? So I really wanted to give people the Ayurveda lens in order to understand these changes.
Yeah. In the author's note at the beginning of the book, you mention that it's an interesting time to write about women's health. As you say, this is quote, concepts of sex and gender are being deconstructed. I thought you navigated this area beautifully by referring to reproductive organs as quote, generative organs, unquote. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to say more about what you mean by generative organs and why you thought it was important to use this language in the writing of the book.
There's a couple reasons for that. You know, our listeners who are familiar with yoga terminology may have heard of Shakti. So Shakti is that sort of creative or generative energy in the cosmos. And so, philosophically speaking, at the basis of yoga as well as Ayurveda is this duality or this combination of consciousness and energy and matter. And so Shakti is that energy, and Prakriti, which means nature, is the matter, you know, like the five elements that compose the body. And the reason I wanted to go with the generative, calling this the generative system, is because not everyone is going to harness that Shakti energy of the womb, right, and the ovaries, right, and the sexual juices that are present in the body. Those are called Shukra, which is such a cool concept. But not everyone wants to harness that energy in the direction of having children. Right. So the idea is that this reproductive organ, it's actually generative. It's not a reproductive energy. It's a generative energy, which we can harness, we can build, we can preserve and protect this energy, and we can channel it in the direction of doing whatever we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great distinction. Well, we've had several programs by Ayurveda over time, including one earlier this year, and also many in the past. For those who aren't familiar with it, I wanted to say a little bit more about Ayurveda as a natural system of medicine, which originated in India more than 3,000 years ago. The term Ayurveda itself is derived from Sanskrit words ayur, meaning life, and Veda, meaning science or knowledge. So therefore, the word Ayurveda translates to knowledge or science of life. You mentioned that Ayurveda excels as preventative medicine, and I would totally agree. So your quote is, Ayurveda excels as preventive medicine. It recognizes that every human is a microcosm, a small part, a reflection of the macrocosm, the big picture or universe. Our minds and bodies are made up of the same elements that make up everything else around us. We are moved by the same forces that move the oceans, winds, and planets. I just thought that was so beautifully put, and it is one of my favorite things about Ayurveda, that it does view each of us as existing within this larger environment and quite, you know, related to it, quite a big part of it, which in my experience of Western medicine is not so much the case. I think it's really important that is acknowledged in Ayurveda, the recognition that the forces that act on the outer world also affect us. In a way, I think this view of each of us integrated with our wider world is actually healing in itself. Would you say more about how the view of ourselves as a microcosm of the macrocosm, the wider world, is important, particularly in women's health and wellness?
Yeah, we are made of the same stuff as the planet that surrounds us, right? And we're made of the same elements. So there's that matter, that prakriti, that composes the universe as we know it, like the tangible universe. And so this combination of earth element, water element, fire element, air, and space, right? Those are present in our bodies. Those are present in trees and squirrels, right? And grass and oceans and everything out there. There is no separation in that way between like a human body and everything that surrounds us. Right? We're all made of the same stuff. We're just sort of physiologically arranged differently, right? And doing different functions, let's say. And so like one of the examples I like to use for this that is really important, really pressing, I think, at this time, it has to do with digestion. Mm-hmm. So if we take this microcosm, macrocosm journey, right? And we say we're going to eat a carrot, right? The carrot is composed of the five elements, the rain, right? The soil that it grew in, the seed that it germinated from, right? There's the gases, there's all the different things that are present in the carrot. So those five elements, then we take them into the body, and through the act of digesting, those elements literally become the tissues of the body. And Ayurveda has this very sophisticated description of that journey of food through digestion, absorption, and assimilation. And so when we eat the carrot, you know, from that place, and we're, you know, we're aware that these are the elements that build our bodies, and that, like, you know, we become one with the carrot, right? We become
literally.
Literally. And I really feel that in this sense, like the act of eating and digesting well, literally makes us one with the cosmos. And it's something we have to do several times every day, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really, I feel like, that where the rubber meets the road with the philosophy is when we eat food and digest it.
Mm-hmm. No, the centrality of paying attention to our diet and the properties of foods, I think it's just a beautiful part of Ayurveda. And really, as I have thought about it from an Ayurvedic perspective, it is so interesting, because our gut is where the inside meets the outside, right? I mean, it's right. Where we literally take in, we even say it that way, right? We take in, you know, food, we take in, you know, our nutrition. And leading on from that, I wanted to talk about balance, because balance is such an important thing in Ayurveda. balance is really one of the central themes, as you point out in Ayurveda. When we're talking about hormones or doshas, these mind-body constitutions, which we're going to talk about in a moment, we're always seeking balance in Ayurveda. And I wanted to point this out or kind of underline this by sharing a quote from the book where you describe several different illustrations of the balance that's needed between two competing forces. The quote is, "The two components of essential balance have many names, Langana or lightning, and Brahmana or building, or Ha, solar, and Tha, lunar, as the Hatha yogis described, Yang and Yin, respectively, according to Chinese medicine, catabolic and anabolic by Western names. These basic energy opposites are present in the body, mind, planet, and cosmos. Get up and go and mellow down energies. Each influences the mind, blood, glands, and emotions with their qualities. Light, hot, and dry versus heavy, cool, and moist." And I just thought that was just so well put, you know, and pointing out that it does this idea of this balancing of the two energies, these two kind of competing forces, is really present in all of those examples that you gave. From the perspective of Western medicine, it's my background, there are many systems in the body that are designed to balance each other just in this way. So in every place that there is, for example, a hormone, there's a system that the hormone increases. There's also another system that is the balancing system where the hormone decreases. And those are, you know, they go back and forth, you know, in a healthy body. This is particularly true in the stress response, which we know is so important, you know, in our health. And the balancing response to the stress response, which is variably called the relaxation response or the rest and digest response. Did you want to comment more about this central thing in Ayurveda, really, which is balance and these two kind of, you know, competing forces?
I love the way that Ayurveda puts it out there, because basically, you know, every substance, every activity, right, everything we take in has qualities.
Right.
So they're either solar qualities or lunar qualities, right? Things that can make us get up and go and stimulate, or things that like slow down and calm down the system, right? So it's like coffee versus mashed potatoes, right? Right. Like they have these qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of a great obvious example. Right. And so in Ayurveda, there's basically words that we use, adjectives that we use to describe the attributes of substances, which tells us how the body will react to the substance. So coffee is hot, right, and sharp.
Right.
So it makes you hungry, it makes you sweaty, right? It stimulates you. Mashed potatoes are heavy, cool, and moist. Right. So it really stabilizes the system, which is why after a crazy day, one might crave, you know, so-called comfort food like mashed potatoes.
Yes.
Right. It just grounds you down in the body. And so as you described very well, you know, in Western medicine, this is also present, right? Is the body is constantly balancing itself. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I feel this essential balance is so important right now has to do with the fact that our hormones are also divided in this way, that in that they balance each other, right? So if we were going to just zoom out and look down at the question of essential balance for women, the problems that I see manifesting for a lot of women have to do with an imbalance between sex hormones and stress hormones. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's basically that idea that a body under stress is not going to prioritize fertility and juicy qualities. It's going to prioritize survival.
Right.
Right. Which is a totally different group of chemicals, of hormones, right? That are being secreted when we're under stress, like adrenaline and cortisol, which live in the bloodstream, and they have similar qualities in some ways to coffee. They're drying, they're hot, they're stimulating, you know, with good reason, so that we can get moving when we need to, you know, so that, you know, our body gets the resources that it needs to take extreme measures at times where we really need it. You know, like if your child is in like the NICU, you know, you're not getting any rest, you know, your body's going to go into a cortisol mode and you're going to be up all night, right? Sitting with your sick child. And that makes sense. And so the body puts all the energy in that bucket, right? In that direction. And that which opposes that in our bodies is estrogen, primarily estrogen. Also, progesterone is another sex hormone we could name, right? And those two balance each other, mm-hmm. right? In that one of them sort of builds the uterine lining and the other one signals its release. Mm-hmm. And so within that, we find that monthly cycle, right? That during the fertile years, women go through. And so we are seeing some challenges in bodies on that side of things.
Yeah.
Right. In that the heavy, moist, cool, really juicy, and what I would call lunar qualities,
right.
That sort of downregulated version of energy, that we're having less of that, right? Or not enough of that to oppose the amount of stress hormones.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I would just point out that the stress response, which has been with our bodies probably since we've had bodies, so many thousands of years, was really built in a different age. It was built when a stress was something that happened for a very short period of time, and then the body could then recover. Whereas I feel like now, especially with people who have alerts on their phones, it's like we're constantly in that state that, you know, constant chronic stress response just goes on and on and on and on. And you can just intuitively see how that would be a problem, that would really, you know, cause an imbalance. So the importance of balance in Ayurveda really leads us to another of the key principles in Ayurveda, which is that like builds like, or said differently, opposites balance each other. And on one hand, this seems really like, you know, straightforward and, you know, not anything that's a leap that requires us, you know, a leap in our understanding. But Ayurveda really approaches this with a lot of subtlety. And one of the things I really appreciate, you know, you talk a lot in your books about, you know, about what balances, you know, each quality, but you also include on that list, not just foods, but you also include activities, which I love, you know, so would you like to comment further about just the, you know, like builds like or opposites balance each other?
Right. Yeah. And the way in which we create the balance in the body, right? So say we have too much heat, right? Due to cortisol, to stay with that example, we are going to need to take in things that are cooling mm-hmm. and reduce things that are heating. Right. So we'll stick with the coffee example. Coffee really heats the body up, right? It puts more adrenaline in the bloodstream. Coffee's hot, right? And so a person might get all sorts of hot related things like hot flashes or waking up in the middle of the night, right? These sorts of things. And instead, we might choose something that sort of cools and calms the body down, right? Like mashed potatoes, potentially, right? Or coconut water. You know, when we have that sort of impulse to have a coffee, what if we chose a coconut water instead, right? And we get sort of the minerals and the hydration, a little bit of the sweet taste, right? These are things that really calm and cool the body down. Also balance the blood, right? Because that all that heat is in the blood from the stress hormones. So that's a big topic in the book that I go into quite a bit, is sort of keeping the blood healthy and balanced for women. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting that I love that you're pointing out, because this is very dear to my heart, I talk about food. I've written several cookbooks, right? But that's really because that's the best entry point for us into understanding Ayurveda and our bodies. But the fields in which we create balance is not only in food and the substances that we take in, but also in our experiences.
Right.
Right. So it's like bungee jumping versus, you know, cuddling, right? Or snuggling with your dogs and things. Those are activities that are going to have very different effects, right? On something like the stress levels in the blood.
Right.
And also our emotions, mm-hmm. right? So there's experience, there's emotions, and then there's substances. So also, you know, the things that come into our field that affect us emotionally, you know, being with family, which can be great. It can also be really hard, right? You know, or dating or relationships, right? Or there's all these things that really affect our emotions. I think the media that we take in, whether it's like what kind of a film are we watching, or how much news, or what time of day are we watching news, social media, right? All these things are food for the mind. And for the emotional body. And they also have qualities and affect our balance and our health.
Yeah, thank you for those comments. I totally agree. And I think that a lot of times the other things that we ingest, as you said, like our news or social media, it's something that is much more, much less of a conscious choice. And this gives us an opportunity to broaden our idea about, well, what does it mean to ingest? You know, like, what do we ingest besides food? What's our media diet like? That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. So important. It's funny where you say, you know, that our choices around that sort of intake might be unconscious, but I'm a professional, right? But for me, I am definitely thinking as much about what I'm taking in through, say, a television or a phone than I am thinking about food. I might even think about that the screens more than I think about the food and how that's affecting my balance. Yeah.
So you've already mentioned this, but Ayurveda is a five element. It's based on the five element system. So the Ayurveda looks at the body as being composed of these five elements, which in Ayurveda and yoga, the five elements are ether or space, air, fire, water, and earth. And you talk in the book about the five elements, and would you give an example of a biological function that mirrors each element? I think that might help listeners understand the five element as applies to the body a little bit more deeply.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So we could start with the most stable element, which is earth. Right. And so earth really is anything you can like grab and squeeze, you know, on the body. So it's there in our bones. It's there in like adipose tissue, skin, all the meats, the organ meats, you know, like your liver and your intestines, all these things. Right. The structural components of the body are earth element. So it's really all over the place. They're all over the place. But then we have water, which is another easy one to connect to. You know, the more stable the elements are, the easier I think it is for us in the beginning to get a sense of them. So water elements like your saliva, your mucous membranes, you know, so like your sinuses, your lungs, your digestive tract, there's always a mucus there. Your blood is a liquid, right? There's digestive juices. So there's a lot of things moving in the body where water is that medium. Right. So namely like the bloodstream and the lymphatic fluid, all these things. Right. So there's that water is that medium that often circulates or lubricates or protects. And then we have fire element, which is anywhere that it's hot. So your liver, your hydrochloric acid in the stomach, the liver enzymes, you know, that chemical digestion that happens in the small intestine.
Right.
Also the fire of the intellect, right? The fire of the emotion. So, you know, people who are like fired up, right?
Literally. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like really passionate or really irritable, you know, that's fire element also manifesting.
Yeah. Just as an aside, I just think it's so interesting that even the, you know, the Western medical terms sometimes really reflect that. So we have heart burn.
Yes, right.
we have burn out.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry.
I know. And we say the neurons are firing.
Firing, yeah.
In the brain, right? So that's the fire of the intellect, you know. So fire is the easiest place to think about it is definitely like digestion, right? Digestive juices. And then we start to get more subtle. Now we're moving into air element. But anytime we burp or fart, that is air, right? Yes. The less glamorous element, but definitely, yeah, right? There's air in the digestive tract all over the place, right? Probably in the sinuses and the mouth, the ears. Air is moving. That's how we hear, right? Air is affecting the skin quite a bit because the skin is that organ that is exposed to the air, unlike so many other organs that are on the inside. So the air is definitely moving. You know, its main function is move. Like if you look at the sky, you know, and there's clouds up there, they're not just sitting there ever, right? So the movement principle in the body, in the cosmos, comes from air element because it's nature. It's like a Jack Russell terrier, right? Its nature is to move.
And of course, the air we breathe in and out, you know, and that's a,
Yep,
you know,
sure.
obvious
Yes.
one.
Right, respiration. Yeah, absolutely. And then space element is also all over the body, right? So like our ears, our space inside, the little tiny eardrum in there, right? The entire digestive tract from the mouth to the anus is actually a big tube, a big open space with all the stuff in it. All these things we put in and they go out, and right, all this stuff is happening. There's air and fire and water in there, but it's primarily to begin with a space. You know, the center of the bones have space. That's where the bone marrow fills, right? So that one's a little, you know, less obvious. But when you start to think about space as an aspect of the body, you realize that anything that moves is moving along this field of space. That without space, the air can't move, and that can be a very uncomfortable imbalance to have.
For some reason, I was thinking about a little baby with colic, you know, talk about, you know, uncomfortable, uncomfortable with that
Exactly.
little gas that just needs to get out.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of adults walk around like that as well. Yeah.
So I wanted to turn now to dosha, which is a key Ayurvedic term. Doshas are mind-body constitutions, and Ayurveda recognizes three primary doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha. And I thought it was good to talk about the elements first because each dosha is made up of two out of the five elements. So vata is made of ether and air. Pitta is made of fire and water, and kapha is made up of earth and water. So would you talk a little bit about why it's important to understand the underlying elements that make up each dosha?
I think the reason it's important to understand the elemental composition of the doshas is because the elements are what bring the qualities. Like earth is dense, right? And water is moist. And the doshas are really essentially just groups of qualities that do specific functions in the body. They naturally, when these five elements from our cosmos get into a human body, they compound into these pairs that do specific jobs. So, or like if you go down to the beach and you try to build a sandcastle with just sand, you have to add water, right, in order to get cohesion and create structure. And so that's very much what this kapha component is, that structural component of the body, and also a lubricant. So mucus itself is an aspect of kapha, right? So that's what's protecting our lungs and our sinuses, right? It's bringing moisture to the skin. So that's what is lubricating and building everything in the body. And fire element, if it were on its own, you know, it'd be like a forest fire in the body, right? So the fire element is contained by water in order to create like a fire water, which is acidic, and it's very acidic, right? And so we have some of that in our blood because the blood, as we know, is it's warm. Again, we might be hot blooded, right? Which means there's even more heat in the blood, and the digestive juices, right? In the digestive tract, all the kind of stuff is pitta, the lubrication of the nerve tissue, like the ability for the synapses to fire. That's pitta. Right. And so there's a little bit of lubricant there because we can't just have fire element moving through the nerves, right? So it's this sort of acidic, hot, very mobile, sharp energy in the body that digests things and also transforms things, right? So we take information, we kind of comprehend it. That's a function of the pitta, just like how we take in food. and comprehend it, right? And we also digest emotion, and the body digests stress hormones, right? Pulls them out of the blood. All that kind of activity is your pitta, and it's the fire that sort of cooks and breaks things down. And then with water, it keeps the fire at bay.
Yeah.
Let's say. And the combination that we call vata, this is space and air. So I kind of spoke to that already, right? That without space, air can't move.
Right.
So the space is in the body, like your digestive tract, for example, create the currents that the wind moves through in the body that does things like, you know, food goes in the mouth, the waste comes out the anus, right? It's like a body note. There's a wind that moves in that downward direction. The menstrual cycle moves down, right? The egg knows which direction to go down the tube, right?
Right.
The circulation through arteries and veins, right? All of these currents are baked into this combination of air moving within spaces in the body. And we call that vata, which means that which moves.
Oh, just a beautiful description. Thank you so much. As a reminder to our listeners, today on the Yoga Hour, my guest is Kate O'Donnell. Kate is the author of 4 Ayurvedic books published in 7 languages, as well as an international presenter, certified Ayurveda practitioner and teacher. The book that we're discussing today is her new book, which is due out next week, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health. The website is healwithkate.org. And did you want to mention anything about the what we were talking about beforehand?
About absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So the book comes out basically a week from the day that we're airing this podcast. And if at healwithkate.org, if you go to the books tab, I'm hitting the road when the book is released on April 23rd, and I'll be in different cities throughout the United States. So definitely, if you're listening to this, check it out to see if I might be coming near you for an event. You can get your copy of the book signed. Usually there'll be a talk, a workshop, some tea time. I would love to meet everyone who is connecting with this book.
Beautiful. We'll publish the links to Kate's website on our website, along with this program. Our website is theyogahour.com. We welcome your comments and questions. You can contact us via that website, theyogahour.com, where you can also sign up for our mailing list. Kate, you have this great quote at the beginning of chapter 3, in sharing and insisting on our use of Ayurveda's language for generative anatomy. My mission is to empower you with a new way to perceive this aspect of the body. These organs, systems, and functions are all integrated parts of one sacred package, you. I just love that. That's really great. And a little later in the chapter, you mentioned that since Ayurveda prioritizes physiology over anatomy and doesn't compartmentalize the physical and the functional, good circulation is key. A healthy diet, regular movement, and periodic detoxing are Ayurveda's tools for healthy circulation in the generative system. So would you talk more about that, the circulation, and some examples maybe of this circulation in the generative system?
Yeah, what you're pointing at there, Laurel, is the difference between, you know, if we like take an organ from a body and just like take it outside the body, put it on the floor, right? It's dead. It has no function, has no prana. And so a lot of the information that we get about our hormone balance, about, you know, our stomach, our food, all these kinds of things, when they're disconnected from each other, we don't understand the function, the movements in the body, and everything in the body, as we've seen already with our discussion about vata, right? And that which moves, everything in the body is moving and in flux, and the hormones are absolutely like that. If we take one hormone and we say, well, this one's low, as you described earlier, from a Western standpoint, if one of them's low, that means something else is high, right? Something else is unopposed. Because so the problem with the way that we're looking at hormones is that if you just take one out and look at it, you know, and try to replace it, you don't see why that one hormone is doing what it's doing. And there's also the ramifications of that imbalance in the one place, how is that affecting the rest of the system? And that's really important that we see the whole picture in that way, and that we also understand the causative factors of our imbalance. So one of the things that really came out to me in my decades of working with women's bodies, as well as in my research and my study of the texts, was the importance of circulation. And so when I say generative system, we're talking about, you know, uterus, ovaries, fallopian tubes, vaginal canal, right? Kind of a lot of stuff and a lot of functions going on in a very small part of the body, right? Like per capita, the generative system and like all the action that goes on there is pretty big deal. And it's basically like between your pelvic floor and your navel, not even, you know?
Not even, right? Yeah.
Not even, right? So it's a tiny little area, and it's one that tends to get smushed a lot.
That's a technical term for listeners.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I love this, you know, the language that I like to use, that I insist upon using, is experiential.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm not going to say something crazy that just goes on over your head. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're slumping, or we're wearing restrictive clothing, right? Tight pants, or we're tense. You know, a lot of women put the tension into the abdomen. And I think there's also a lot of cultural messaging about abdomens, right? And their shapes and sizes, et cetera.
Right.
We've got a lot of air in there, right? The home of the air element in the body is the large intestine, which basically surrounds the generative system. So we're also, right, if we have air element happening through the digestive process, that's also going to potentially, the real estate in this small part of the body starts to be at more and more of a premium, you know?
Right.
So I really feel that improving the circulation of prana, right? So we could say blood, yes, you know, but I think a more holistic term for what we're talking about is we're trying to get life energy moving right through this part of the body,
right?
Which, when you think about it, is not rocket science. Right? It's like, oh geez, I've been sitting all day, wow, like what's that doing to the space between my pelvic floor and my navel? Maybe I should, you know, get up and take a walk. You know, maybe I would do a castor oil pack on the abdomen, which is one of the tools I lean into a lot and talk about in the book. And it's different the way it works on different conditions. Maybe we want to do some breathing, right? Like breathing into the belly, because that's another thing that happens, right? The way that yoga and Ayurveda both understand life energy is that it rides on the breath. Mm-hmm. The breath is like the chariot, right, of our life energy. And so something, what I have found in my practice is that the most profound healing can happen through the generative system and the generative organs through practices that bring breath to the area. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important that when I say circulation, we're all clear that I'm not just talking about blood or lymph,
mm-hmm.
right? But that we're really talking about life energy. And so the mind has a lot to do with that,
mm-hmm.
right? And how we breathe and how, where we send the breath, you know, has to do with the consciousness. So in the book, I go really in depth on, we have names for the energy that circulates in that part of the body, the apana vata. Mm-hmm. It's like a subset of the movement currents in the body that does all the stuff that happens below the navel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, it's a huge, huge topic in Ayurvedic medicine, and specifically for women, mm-hmm. because we have all of these downward activities,
right,
with our blood and our eggs, right, as well as our poop and our pee, right, and like so many things are basically moving down below the waist,
yeah.
And if those things start to get out of balance, any of them that can start to affect the other functions down there. And then we can just go on all day, right, about the what might happen if we allow the circulation in that area to become stagnant or to not move in the correct direction or at the correct amount and speed and these things. So there's a lot in the book about how we do that. Some of the techniques are very physical, have to do with what we eat. Do we have gas? Let's work on that, right? Has to do with bringing circulation blood to the area. Yes, right? Yoga postures, food, castor oil. And then there's also subtle practices,
right,
that have to do with breathing and consciousness and also the shapes we make with our body throughout the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. A lot. Excuse me, a lot of distance to travel from smushed. That's great.
Right.
So the book is, of course, full of recipes and recommendations to support women's bodies throughout the different stages of life, which I really appreciate. One of the concepts you talk about in the book is optimizing digestion and metabolism, which we've already touched on a little bit. In today's world, many quote unquote experts tell us that it's good to snack throughout the day, but the opposite is really recommended in Ayurveda. Would you say more about that? Why is snacking throughout the day not recommended in Ayurveda?
Good question. Yeah, a lot of people wonder that. And when we snack, imagine a world where we're cooking rice, right? And we put, you know, the rice, you put the water, you turn it on, you cook it. And then halfway through the cook time, you decide to add some more rice. All right. So then at the end, you're going to end up, the timer goes off, and then you're going to end up with this partially digested rice, the stuff right. You just threw in late, right? As well as the overdigested rice that started at the beginning. So there's no like perfect amount of cook time there that's going to get you the rice the way that you want it, the way you want to eat it, right?
Right.
So the idea in how we eat in Ayurveda, it has to do with allowing a meal to completely digest before we take something else.
Right.
And that digestion, you know, in the stomach is usually going to be at least 90 minutes to 2 hours. A larger meal might take longer, but ideally we would even allow the small intestine to get to work too, so that all that pitta, all that digestive function in the body can really focus on the chemical digestion of that meal that you ate, you know, a few hours ago. And then we get hungry again and we eat again. And then the process starts again, so that it's like each meal gets to fully go through this process, which let's say it takes about 4 hours, something like that, right?
Right.
And that is not an easy thing for people who are not used to eating meals, right? If somebody's listening and they're like, oh my gosh, wow, you know, I really want to do this, like give it some time and maybe just focus on getting a nice long interval in between two of your meals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, can I get from breakfast to lunch without a snack? And then whatever happens the rest of the day, like, God help me, you know, or can I get from lunch to dinner without snacking, you know,
right.
Or can I eat four times a day? Instead of like kind of all day, you know, and there's different ways that I describe working with that and working towards that. But what happens when we digest a meal completely is we get the nutrition, we get the nutritive juice that is absorbed, you know, through the small intestine and then moves out into circulation in the body through this very beautiful metaphor that we call rasa. Mm-hmm. And rasa means juice or sap, you know, it's like the sap that moves in a tree. Rasa right. also means, it can mean emotion. Mm. And it's a term used in music and art as well, you know, to describe the taste or the feel or the emotion that something brings you. Mm-hmm. So this rasa, this circulating nutritive factor in the body that is literally made of food, actually flavors our personality, right? It flavors our perception of the world. And it's really our ability to feel like we are ourselves, mm-hmm. to have a balanced rasa. So that is so huge, right? And that all can start with a practice like learning how to not eat until the previous meal has been digested.
Great description. Thank you for that. In the book, you talk about how the body prepares for food and that taste is part of that. When we taste the food, we perceive its essence. And you describe here the digestive process begins, the body receives the signals to prepare for what's coming. So this was thought-provoking for me because I know that in our in America, lots of times in an attempt to reduce sugar, excuse me, a little bit of kapha excess here, in an attempt to reduce sugar, artificial sweeteners are added to many of the foods that we eat. And this is a false sense of sweetness. So what does this false sense of sweet do to the way our body processes food?
When the tongue tastes something sweet, yes, it will stimulate the digestive juices, right? That digest a sweet thing. And also your body, sweet taste, which comes from things like whole grains, dairy, root vegetables like beets and carrots, as well as things like maple syrup and sugar cane and honey and dates and figs, right? And all the obviously sweet things, but really like whole grains and also meats. Meat is considered a sweet thing, right? Anything sweet is building, and sweet is that which fills the rasa, right? It like makes the body plump, which is considered a great thing in Ayurveda language. The many times it will be like, oh yes, you know, humans should enjoy this substance because it makes the body plump, which means like lubricated, right? And juicy. So when you take an artificial sweetener, your body is going into that mode, right? And it's like, woo, plump party, you know, like it's time. It's time to digest this stuff. And like, you know, let's get juicy. Let's build some eggs, right? Let's make menstrual blood. Let's make tissues. Let's make the hair, you know, all these things. And then it's not there.
Right.
Right. And then it's not there. And so it can, I think, on a subtle level, really cause a sense of dissatisfaction in the body if it's going on all the time, right? The other path would be to sort of acclimatize the body to more savory tastes, right? And find things that offer the building qualities that the body wants through things that aren't like sugar, but go for, you know, grains, let's say.
Right.
And we can also find that sweetness in not only in substances, but also in experiences, like going to visit like a llama farm, right? That kind of a thing,
right?
Definitely enhance the sweetness, you know, that is present in one's field. So looking not only to substances for the sweet aspects of nature, right? But also to experiences and emotions.
So those of us who have studied Ayurveda are aware that you can begin your study and then there is a lot of detail. I know that you go through in the book, you go through the stages of that you've already mentioned, seasons of life for women, healthy menstruation, fertility, pregnancy, self-care for the new mother, perimenopause, menopause, and healthy aging. And then there are practices, foods, herbs, and spices that and can add in this. And one of the things that I've noticed myself a little bit, but also other people that I've spoken with about Ayurveda, is the complexity can sometimes be overwhelming, where you want to like try and like recreate your whole life, you know, on this new set of principles that you're studying. So how do you teach your students about how best to begin to adopt these Ayurvedic practices without feeling overwhelmed?
Definitely start small, right? And I describe, let's say, you know, where you say you want to like overhaul your life, right? You want to throw away everything in the kitchen and get your Ayurveda pantry, right? And you want right. everyone in your life who it makes it so you can't get up and go to bed at the right time. You want them all to go away. These kinds of things are, it's an extremism. It's an extreme view. And that daily life, is a matrix of activities and rhythms, right? And they all are intertwined with each other. So when we change one thing about the matrix, it's like when you pull a thread out of like a knitted a sweater or something. A thread comes out, and then the thing starts to change, right? Or unravel. So when we, I think a great way to start is that, when you're learning about Ayurveda, say you're listening to this conversation today and you're new and you're like, wow, that thing she said about the rice cooking, uncooked, cooked, like, ooh, the next time I reach for that cookie, an hour after the meal, I'm going to think about that rice analogy, because it sticks to you. I think what happens is something comes into the field as you hear about Ayurveda that sticks in your, in your head. And so if we just take that thing and apply it, and start being aware of it and start working on it, that one thing is going to start to reverberate into the life in other ways, and other habits and other rhythms will follow, in its footsteps. I think the thing in the beginning is to just start, right? To
Great
just
advice. Just
begin.
start. Yeah. Start someplace. And I know I've read, in your book and my own experiences, even small changes can make a difference. And then you can build on those. So unbelievably, we've come to the end of our time together. In closing, what words of encouragement or inspiration would you like to share with our listeners?
Just with what we were just saying, there is this tenet in Ayurveda that when the more complicated a problem presents, the more simple is the treatment. Yeah, and it's true. We balance complexity with simplicity. And so I think the more overwhelmed we feel about life or digestion or the generative health, the more simple we want to be about how we view it. That's why I like this idea of essential balance, the ha and the ta, right? Like getting our solar and our lunar energies so that there's times where we're being quiet and there's times where where it's party time, right? So there's the go, 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 and the slow, slow, slow. And we keep those in balance,
Thank you. For our listeners, you've been listening to the Yoga Hour. It's been my pleasure to share this time with you. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, producer and host of the show. My guest today has been Kate O'Donnell, the author of the book we've been discussing today, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health, which will be published next week, April 23rd, 2024, although you can go ahead and pre-order a copy. You can find out more about Kate O'Donnell at healwithkate.org and also ayurvedicliving.institute. We will post this information along with the recording of this podcast on our website, theyogahour.com. Thank you so much, Kate O'Donnell, for joining me today on the show.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Listeners, we hope that you will join us for the many online programs offered by the sponsor of this program, the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. There's daily online meditation in the morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific, the afternoon at 4 p.m., and on Monday evenings at 7:30. Again, all those times are Pacific time. There's also a Sunday satsang. Satsang is a Sanskrit word meaning a gathering of truth seekers. That happens at 10 a.m. Pacific each week. Another podcast that I encourage listeners to check out is the Kriya Yoga Today podcast with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts or at csecenter.org. There are also, excuse me, many other classes and events listed, which you can check out again at csecenter.org. My guest next time on the Yoga Hour will be Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien. We'll be discussing how love loves love, how we can live in divine love. The Yoga Hour is a service project for the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, a meditation center in the Kriya Yoga tradition. Remember, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, share it with a friend. Thank you to the Yoga Hour team, founder and spiritual director, Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, assistant producers Anne Hayes, Mickey Coronado, Christine Soat, and Lauren Leidinger. I look forward to being with you again. Until then, remember, you carry your own healing and wholeness within you. Share your peace and joy with all you meet.